I'm Ian Mendes, and you're listening to the Sens Columns.
From Studio 65 on the Sens Underground Network, welcome to Season 2, Episode Number 4 of the Sens Call-Ups for Sunday, October 6, 2013. I'm Cardinal, your host, and I'm here with Canuck and Pan. The regular season is finally underway. We've got lots to talk about and a couple of interviews that I'm really looking forward to. You can email us at podcast@senscallups.com. You can find us on Twitter, and you can participate in the forums at sensunderground.com. Boys, those first two games were a bit of a contrast. Are you pressing the panic button yet, Canuck?
No panic yet, but man, I can tell you, those are nail biters.
Oh, edge of the seat, for sure. Pan, you got a voice for us this week?
Yeah, I do. I'm feeling a lot better now. It's yeah. I'm not clipping out either, which is pretty good. Feeling a lot better. And just this week's been real busy with trying to catch up because, Canuck and I are going away.
That's right. Want to give our listeners a quick recap of where you're going and what you're going to be doing? Because they'll be jealous.
Well, I've got something like 5 flights in 6 days or so. It's going to be rough. But heading down to... We're following the team on the California road trip and actually meeting up with TJ and Kathy when we're down there. So that'll be fun. Have you talked to TJ at all? Because I know you're discussing things with him and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm overdue to send TJ an email and iron out where we're meeting. So
okay.
It's been one of those weeks. But yeah, long story short, yeah, Pan and I are going, well, I'm going to California for work and Pan's coming along and we're going to go to the game in LA and then in San Jose and Anaheim before we come back. So going to represent in California. Should be fun.
I'll be sitting at home taking game notes. It's okay.
Yay.
Yeah.
I don't think you thought about the time difference yet either.
I don't care. I'm a night owl. It's quite all right. I'll manage. Or maybe I'll find somebody on the West Coast who wants to take them. You never know. We got lots to talk about. We actually have regular season games to talk about. Games that actually mean something for a change and have a regular lineup in them. So... let's get going.
All right. Game on!
Since our last episode, we had the team has actually made their final cuts. And set the roster for opening night. So just before we get to the game summaries, a couple of little things to talk about there. Curtis Lazar, who was with the team through the entire camp, was sent back to the Edmonton Oil Kings of the WHL. Everybody who was put on waivers, cleared waivers. And the final roster included Corey Conacher, JGP, and Stefan DaCosta, but it did not include Mika Zibanejad. He's been sent down to bingo.
Yikes.
Which has all the conspiracy people talking about what the reasoning was behind that.
There's really only one reason. He has a two-way. The other guys don't. It's the Pageau beginning of the season.
I think Pageau does, but
DaCosta
he's damn
doesn't.
Worth it. What was that?
DaCosta doesn't have a two-way, so.
Yeah, well, I don't care. No one's going to pick him up anyway.
I think they're probably trying to showcase him and get somebody to pick him up after an early season injury. Something like
just
that.
Just please. Please, someone pick him up, please.
Well, you never know what we might get for him.
Get off my team, DaCosta. There we go.
Jeez. Crusty
little
old
bit
man.
Of venom, wow.
It's 2 days and I've already gotten to pick my guy.
Well, that's your whipping boy for the season, is it?
Daco, get off! Anyway, All
right.
But yeah, there's been some other things in regards to like Zibanejad going down because it was a budget thing.
Yeah.
It's like, listen. And I think Melnick came on the radio and said that the team's over budget already. It's like, oh, Jesus. Like, we're just getting started here, and he's already got to throw the money thing again. In my opinion, if anything was truly a budget problem, they would have traded Craig Anderson out. Because that's $4.25 million.
It's a good point.
If not more. And Leonard's good.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think the whole money conspiracy is the new goalie controversy. We don't have a goalie controversy this year. We have two really good goalies, so we can't have a goalie controversy. Well, we got to have a controversy about something. So now every single thing is about money. No matter what it is, it's about money.
Melnick is going through a divorce. I think it's a really nasty divorce. And we're complaining about all the games and the way he's hiding money and reporting things this way and that way. I have a suspicion that a big reason why he's saying what he's saying about not making much money and reporting things the way he is probably because of that divorce proceedings. I think I'm right, and that's correct. I hope I'm not wrong there. So
it's an interesting theory. It's as good as anything else.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't know, because if he doesn't get his stuff together, not only does the salary cap go up, but the floor goes up. And if you're saying that you want a $50 million payroll, you're going to get, the floor is going to grow to above that in 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
So they're screwed. So the only real way around this is either to get a business partner, which I don't think he'll really want to work with, or sell the team.
Well.
But, yeah.
We'll see.
If you can turn some of that debt into equity, it just solves everything, apparently.
Well, how does that work? You explained this to me the other day, and I can't possibly voice it properly. So, cue you.
All right, so it's kind of like a math. Anyways, because was it you told me that a lot of their expenses is in regards to their debt, and they've had to restructure their debt and get things kind of organized that way. Now, okay, let's say, Cardinal, you own your house. It's worth $300,000 instead of the $320 million or whatever it is, and you have a mortgage on for $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just assume that your mortgage payment might be $1,000 a month. And then Canuck decides, you know what? I'll come in and I'll move in with you because you've told me that your payment's kind of high for you. I'll come in and I'll just give you the $100,000 and then we'll figure it out. So with that, the mortgage payment gets eliminated right away. But of that $1,000, maybe $300 was going to the interest expense. Well, the other $700 is going back into your own capital. So what this would allow you guys to do is combined spend $700 or 70 cents on each dollar on other things like salaries.
Okay.
Versus kind of blowing that away to the mortgage payment. Well, so that's really the only way that he's got to fix this unless he's willing to spend more.
Well, I guess we'll see. I'm just tired of everything being about money all the time. I mean, we've been through this how many times with this team? I'm just sick of hearing it. But it's a small market team, I guess. And we don't have a goalie controversy. And media really like a controversy with this team. So we got to find one somewhere. Let's move on to game one.
All right.
Which was a 1-0 victory by the Sens over the Slugs.
Yeah.
Go for it.
That's pretty much it because, Cardinal and Shredder and I went out to James Street Pub. It was very fun. So I kind of tanked at this game recap. I was going to write notes for things that were really outstanding and goals and plays that way, but really wasn't much except for a hell of a lot of goaltending. First period starts off, there was a lot of Buffalo penalties right off the bat. So that gave Ottawa some good chances. Weirkosh did wire it off the crossbar at one point, which was a hell of a shot. Besides that, just Team USA, look out, because Ryan Miller and Craig Anderson were incredible the whole game. So it just really went back and forth that way. Apparently, Ottawa is giving up a lot of different turnovers and whatnot. I didn't necessarily focus much on it. But in the first period alone, the shots were 23-16 for Ottawa. Game ended up with 46-35, which is an extremely high shooting game.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
You mentioned all the power play opportunities. I also, everybody's paying attention to the first line right now. And the first power play unit, of course, being the big three up there too. I really liked what I saw on that power play unit. Yeah, they didn't score on it, but they were just, I thought they had the right element of passing it around the perimeter, getting right to the net. And McCulloch had like some great deflections. And I mean, Miller was amazing. Like if it was any other goalie in there, I think we would have talked about this game very differently. I really liked the way they buzzed against Buffalo for most of the night. I thought they were rusty. Heck, it's practically the first game they played all three together for the preseason because Spezza was out with the soreness and that. So I'm looking forward to what's going to go ahead here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple minutes left. Anderson just does this game-saving save. About 30 seconds later, a minute and a half left, or minute 35, Pesky sends kind of return on with Clark MacArthur, a beautiful backdoor pass to Carlson, who just shoots it right through Miller, who didn't have a chance on it either. So I think the peskiness is back. Well, at least was for this game. It was exciting. It was fast. It was good. And it's a nice win to get that over a divisional rival just in regulation, too, to take away their points.
Exactly.
And we won the game, but everybody starts ripping on Pageau for taking the shot at the empty net. Like, people on Twitter would not stop talking about that.
But if he had made that shot, he would have been a hero.
No, I'm actually quite thankful he took the shot because I had a little bet going that they're going to win by two or more. And I'm like, shoot. I'm like, oh, and Weirkosh actually had a really close chance there too. Both went wide of the empty net.
Exactly. I caught on the news the other day that that first period was the most shots in a scoreless first period in the entire expansion era of the NHL. So since 1968. Most shots in a scoreless first period.
Wow.
Wow.
And it ended up 46-35. That's 81 shots on goal. That's more than an OHL game, never mind an NHL game.
Yeah.
But
so
goalie clinic for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was really intense. And, you know, after you get a shutout, you definitely want the next start. Just back to backs and whatnot, even facing 35 shots. So let's go play the Leafs.
Yeah.
All right, let's go play the Leafs. Game two, of course, it's the second game in a back to back. So, of course, we're going to be playing Toronto in the second game of a back to back. Fortunately, we don't have to do the game summary for this one because it's been submitted by a listener, CB Inc. Thank you very much for doing the summary. Canuck, you want to drop that one in here?
This is CB Inc. reporting behind enemy lines, south of the forward. Tonight's game recap for Saturday, October 5th. Tonight, I'm watching the game with Mrs. CB Inc., not the famous Tony. Reimer starts out in net, and Anderson starts in net, with Fraser out with a twerking accident. I've been hearing about how much Clark MacArthur's been looking forward to tonight, and for the record, I still like the shootout. Mrs. CB Inc. does it. As the television camera shows Air Canada Square, Mrs. CB Inc. wants to know, what are all those people doing? In the first period, Bobby Ryan was looking pretty good early on, but Mason Raymond scored, making it 1-0 for the Leafs. Not much chance for Anderson on that one. Turris made a nice-looking goal, tying it at just 3 minutes later, followed by Conacher 3 minutes after that, making it 2-1 for the Sens. Franzen got a hooking penalty, but before the penalty's over, Carlson gets a tripping penalty, making it a 4-on-4 for 30 seconds. Zach Smith gets a slashing call, 5-3 power play for the Leafs. Kadri scores just as the first penalty expires, tying the game at 2. Despite the 2-2 score, Leafs suck. In the second period, Spezza gets a quick high-sticking penalty, but later on Cowan scores while Reimer does the hokey-pokey, 3-2 Sens. 15 seconds later, Spezza makes it 4-2. Reamer gets burned out of the net. Mississippi Inc. asks if we can watch something else. In her eyes, the game is over. Then she asks, what happened to Reamer? Spezza gets another penalty hooking on Lupo. I am only going to say his name backward for the rest of the season. On the power play, Lupo scores 4-3 cents. Some roughing happens during the intermission, and we start the third 4-on-4. Van Riebdyk scores, making it 4-4. Oh, MacArthur really, really wants a goal tonight. I think the third was the most exciting, lots of end-to-end play. We go into overtime. Cowan gets away with what might have been a penalty shot, but he pulls a sixth penalty, and the Leafs have a 4-on-3 power play for 42 seconds. But there was no scoring. We go to the shootout. Mason Raymond scores. Mikhailik doesn't. Tyler Bozak scores, and Spezza can't get it by Bernier. Toronto wins 5-4. And for the record, why do I do this?
Thanks, CB Inc. You do it, and we appreciate it because it means we don't have to. Or I don't have to. Well, we don't have to.
Division of labor.
Exactly.
Many, many people.
It's even better than sending email. You know, doing something like this. It's a great way to, people want to do them for us. We're always always open for it. So just let us know, preferably before the game starts. But do appreciate it. I think that was a pretty good summary of this entire game, which was, it was exciting. It was edge of your seat sort of stuff. My personal opinion of the game was, I think there were some very, there were a couple of weak calls. There were a couple of missed calls. I don't think it was particularly one way or the other. I mean, there was one point where there was at least one high sticking. It was a Condra who got
you got Condra
right in the mouth.
You got Kessel.
Kessel.
Oh,
sorry.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. Thank you. And that was a missed call. I mean, there were a few back and forth, but I mean, that's the way it goes.
Hey, at the end of the day, I think what the Leafs had 6 or 7 chances on the power play and Sens had 1 or 2. 6-2, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wouldn't say that the refereeing was horrible. It was what it was. You got to live with it. So
how about that shootout?
Yeah. That's a good question. That's a good segue. I know I was sitting there going, that was a Spinorama. And those were outlawed, weren't they? And it turns out they weren't. I didn't know this. How about you two?
I didn't know about the outlaw part, but when I watched it, I'm kind of like, what? Oh, that doesn't count. And like, they're counting it. And then I realized that we're screwed. and immediately the announcers afterwards, like when they're showing the replay, and you notice he keeps a movement of the puck and he doesn't keep forward progress. I'm like, no.
He didn't keep forward progress.
He went into the goalie, took kind of Anderson out of the play at the point where he didn't even bother trying because he figured, oh, well, it's over now. Spinned around, put in the empty net. I'm thinking, that is not right. I don't mind someone doing a spinorama coming into the shot, but when you get in the paint and push the goalie aside or get, you know, and then spin around, it's kind of cheap. I mean, there's a big controversy when Dogovins pulled the move he did last season, and this, I think, is way worse.
Well, it's come out from the NHL that today that there's nothing wrong with that goal, and if there were some thoughts that maybe that the spinoramas had been outlawed, but they weren't, and people should have been paying attention on a conference call where that was discussed and that said that they weren't outlawed. So move along.
Well, quite frankly, Spezza missed his opportunity to do it right back. In fact, they all should have done it.
With a big snow shower to the goalie while you're doing it too, just to make it a bit more interesting.
Absolutely. Making a commentary on it.
No, that was ridiculous. But I think the other thing, it looked like he pulled back on the shot. So there was no, like, there was backwards momentum on it.
I thought so, but I guess it's a bit like, you know, they found the right video clip that didn't show backward movement.
I don't remember them giving it any time for review, though.
No. Nope.
Well, they didn't. They didn't.
And no, they but I said mean, they did, then. Which, whatever.
Yeah.
Least anyway, typical.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, you know what? Fool me once, shame on you.
Yeah. Let's see what happens the next time something like that comes up. I want to see somebody else do another big spinorama with a snow shower on the goalie and see what happens on that game.
Yeah, or just kick your stick.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Oh, wait. Don't forget DaCosta, Penn's favorite player, was out this game. But Cassian was in as the big nuclear deterrent. And how'd that go? He played, like, what, 5 minutes?
He had one good play where he actually fed a pass that went through the edge of the blue paint. It was just at the end of, I think it was the second period.
Yeah. No, he did not look horrible when I saw him on the ice. He just wasn't on the ice much. And there's, I think, in the third period, Orr even came over and nailed Weirkosh, you know, pretty good. And no, he just never was seen in the game again.
Well, I think he was in the game because Orr and Devane, and I can't remember which one's hurt. Is McLaren hurt or Fraser hurt?
They're both out. Fraser's very hurt.
Okay. Oh, so they're both out. That's why Devane was up. So there were two goons, Orr and Devane, in the game. I think that's why he was playing. That's why Cassian was playing. So
now, the problem with that, though, is it, and I know why you have to put him in, but you could have had somebody else be the difference. And that really costs you a lot of skill.
I was
4 minutes, 49 seconds.
I was just as surprised to see Corvo playing instead of Greiba. I figured Greiba would be playing in this game because, especially if people started running into a defenseman, having another big solid guy around there would be the thing to have. But
Greiba apparently didn't have that great of a game against Buffalo. You've got to bring Corvo in at some point too.
I guess so.
They're going to be back and forth, those two.
Oh yeah.
Do we trust the Walrus?
Well, of course we do. He knows more about this than we do.
Yeah.
We're so fans. He's a professional.
When I try to get myself worked up, or I see people getting worked up on this kind of stuff, I just kind of stop and, okay, Paul McLean, he knows a lot more about this than I do. He's never kind of let me down. So
I think that's why I'm not mad about Zibanejad.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing with him. Yeah. It's like, as a fan, I really want to see him play, but he knows stuff that I don't know. So
absolutely. Now, just, I think it was before the game in Toronto. I'm not sure if it was before game one or not. Excuse me. There was an interesting interview with Robin Lehner, and Robin Lehner was heated. I don't know if you heard this.
No.
He was told during training camp, after he'd already ordered his new equipment, the new pads that were smaller, and he ordered a new set of sticks for the year and so on, he was suddenly told, oh, by the way, you're not allowed to use the same stick you're using. Because I don't know which section of it that's measured on a goalie stick, but he was using a stick that's 28 inches. And he's only allowed to use a one that's 26. And the reasoning behind this, is because he's not over 6'6". You have to be 6'6" or taller to use a 28-inch stick. Otherwise, you have to use a 26 if you're between 5'11" and 6'5". And in this interview, he said, I'm 6'5". I'm an inch short, and I have to stop using the stick I've been using for 5 or 6 years and use the same stick as a guy who's 6 inches shorter than me. When it's going to be like super long for him, but it's short for me because I'm tall.
Yeah, that'd be weird. How tall are you?
6'1".
6'1"?
Yeah.
It's almost like you using my stick.
I'd be upset.
Yeah.
That's a big adjustment.
Heated. Oh my goodness, he was heated. It was a really interesting press conference. He also lost 2 inches off his pads. And he was asked about that, and he goes, no, it's not a really big deal. I feel a bit more mobile. It's not that big of a difference. I can adjust to that. But now, in having to adjust to a 26-inch stick, he's having to bend his legs differently. He's having to change the posture of his back differently. Like, the entire way that he stands is different because his stick is 2 inches shorter.
This could get interesting.
Well, I decided to do a little bit of research. And I did it yesterday, so the numbers may have changed slightly since then. But I went to NHL.com and looked at the list of every goalie that's played so far this season. And you can reclassify it according to whatever you want. So I reclassified it by height. How many goalies in the NHL who have played so far this season are 6'6" or taller?
One.
The correct answer is four.
Four.
Ben Bishop's 6'7", and Markstrom, Dubnyk, and Lindback are all 6'6". Now, the section...
Dubnyk needs all the help he can get.
Well, he needs a defense is what he needs. But the using a 26-inch stick is between 5'11 and 6'5.
Jeez.
Okay. That would be 34 goalies who have played so far this year. How many goalies are shorter than 5'11 that have played so far this year?
That are shorter than 5'11"?
Shorter than 5'11".
I can't even think of any.
Yeah. There are two.
Miller?
Nope. Not in the list that I was looking at.
Miller's just skinny.
He's just really thin, yeah.
Yeah.
There are 2 5'10" goalies who've played so far this year. Halak and Enroth. Hmm. Everybody else fits in 5'11 to 6'5".
See, you'd think they'd have something like in between, right?
Exactly.
Like that's from 5'11 to 6'2".
Exactly. But why are they setting it at 6'6" when it's the outliers that are that height? That'd be like saying, well, you have to be 6'8" to use anything other than a standard stick because that's Zdeno Chara and nobody else. Well, does that mean that JGP and Jared Cowan are going to use the same stick? I don't think so. It was just a ridiculous ruling that he was pretty heated about, and I wouldn't be surprised if there may be a tweak coming to that because that's going to affect an awful lot of guys who are actually pretty tall because there are a lot of goalies that are in the 6'4", 6'5" range.
Wouldn't be surprised if he plays with an illegal stick.
Yeah, and then somebody decides to measure it. Are you going to notice a difference of 2 inches on a stick when it's standing next to somebody that tall?
Well, seriously, I think it would come to that if it's that affecting on your game.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Anyway, it was a very interesting... I wish I'd been able to find a clip for this, but I couldn't. If I'll keep digging for one, and if I can find one, I'll see if I can play it back for next episode, because it was just one of those interesting things that you're going, your measurement on a goalie stick? Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll see where that goes. Just a couple of quick things about our prospects and Binghamton. Curtis Lazar was sent back down to the WHL. He was made the captain of the Edmonton Oil Kings.
Nice.
And in his first three games, I think it was his first game back, he got a hat trick. In his first three games, he has 3 goals, 3 assists, and is a +6. Kid's a player. Looking forward to this.
He's clearly outgrown that league.
Yeah. He's going to be dominating it for sure.
Need to get him in the AHL. I know he's not allowed to this year, but...
Not allowed to this year. Well, actually, not sure about next year because his birthday's so late.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about next year either. I'd have to look into that.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's what he needs. That's where he needs to be right now.
Could be. Yeah, it's where he definitely needs to be. But depending on how the numbers fit, it may not work. Now, Binghamton had their home opener the other day, and it was a pretty exciting game.
Yeah.
Canuck, I believe you have a little audio clip about this.
Yeah, basically, this is how it ended up.
The walls of Anajad, back for Weidman, just stays onside. Mika Stani scores! Zibanejad with a bullet from the top of the near circle after a pretty game of catch at the line with teammate Chris Weidman. And on the power play, the Sens tie this game up at 3 goals apiece. Cody Ceci had a go off of his stick. Peterson jammed to the glass. Ceci with some room pulls up. Shooting, he scores! Cody Ceci stops on a dime and flips it past the glove hand of Cedric Desjardins. Binghamton's only lead of the night comes in overtime. The Sens win it 4-3.
Man, I love Grady's call of a game. He's got no energy at all. So that was Cody Ceci with the overtime winner. And the other goals in the game, Zibanejad scored the tying goal. And the first goal of the game was by Derek Grant, shorthanded. He had 5 of those last year. And the second goal was by Corey Cowick. Unfortunately, in this game, 2 players had to leave due to injury. Mark Borowiecki left with what some were saying looked like a bit of a high hit. It wasn't a concussion. It's more of a bit of a whiplash problem from what I was reading afterwards. And the other one may be a bit more serious. Mark Stone left the arena. Somebody saw him leaving with his arm in a sling, and he was going to be having an MRI or some sort of scan on his shoulder.
That sucks. He was sent down to get playing time.
Exactly.
And now he's injured.
Yeah. So we hope that's not too serious. And just a little update on what's going on in Binghamton. So there we go. Now, we have a couple of interviews that I'm really excited about tonight. We've been very lucky to get two interviews for this show. Now, the first one, which we'll get into right now, is with our very own public address announcer for the Canadian Tire Center, Stuntman Stu.
Okay, so we have with us now the public address announcer for the Ottawa Senators at the Canadian Tire Center, Stuntman Stu Schwartz. Welcome, Stuntman.
Hello, Sens Underground! Sorry.
Oh, that was great.
Just getting ready for the home opener on October 17th.
Wow. It kind of felt nice of having you yell out her name there. That was great. Yeah, so, Stu, for those of us who aren't from Ottawa, can you tell us a little bit of the history about the Stuntman nickname?
I started at a rock station about 17 years ago, and I was desperate to get on the radio. I was just a college kid at the time at Algonquin, and I was an intern on the morning show at that time at the Bear. And I went out, I did a stunt for the morning show one day, and I came back, and they said, great job, but you need a nickname, you need a handle. And they threw around a bunch of different names. They had, you know, Studley Stu, Super Stu, and then one of the guys said, what about Stuntman Stu? And I remember sitting there and saying, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And, well, here I am, fellas. All these years later. Now, I don't do any stunts anymore. Now I'm just a lazy husband living in Barrhaven.
Yeah, I guess you can't be encasing concrete for the weekend anymore, right?
Yeah, no, I can't. All those stunts from from my past, thankfully, were before the days of YouTube, so my kids can't look that stuff up. But now, I mean, I'm still, you know, some days I go by Stuntman Stu on Magic 100. You know, sometimes at the Senators games, CBC will say, now let's go to the rink announcer, Canadian Tire Center, Stu Schwartz. So I go by both.
There you go. I guess you're going to be all confused with the Scotiabank Place, Canadian Tire Center change up too.
I didn't screw it up during preseason, and a lot of people had bets on, you know, just how long it was going to take me to mess it up. But you know, I've been rehearsing every night at home. You know, telling my kids to go clean their room, and you know, throwing in a Canadian Tire Center in there. But there's still people in Ottawa that call it the Palladium, so that just goes to show you, no matter how many times the place changes its names. You know, if you've got a name ingrained in your head, you're just going to say it.
Yeah.
Exactly right. During the preseason, we talked a bit with Sens DJ in an earlier episode, and he gave us a bit of a feel of what it's like behind the scenes. But from your perspective, can you give us a bit of a description of what it goes on behind the scenes and how everything works for you and how busy your evenings are during your average game from start to finish?
During the game, I mean, there's moments where you can clearly see there's not much going on the ice, and you know the rink is quiet because there's no goals, not a lot of penalties, so that makes my job easy. But then when you have what happened last year during the playoffs, especially against Montreal, I mean, there was that one game that everybody remembers where there was a laundry list of penalties that, you know, I'm still announcing them now, all these months later. That's a pretty scary time when you get so many penalties like that and you have to, you know, repeat what the ref has said, and then you got to try and remember how to do it in French. That's the scariest time to be a PA announcer, and while it's fun to watch on the ice, I'm glad it doesn't happen every game, because it's too much of a nightmare to keep track of. And you know, the PA announcer's job is just announce the goals and penalties, and you know, shut up after that. But you know, we have other stuff, other commitments. You know, reminding fans to buy 50-50. You know, there's a Dodge truck on the ice during intermission. So there's a lot of promos that happen during the game. And I'm in constant contact with the NHL off-ice officials in the penalty box and upstairs. Now, I'm allowed to announce a penalty without double-checking with them, because we can clearly see when the ref comes over. And now they usually say it, but, you know, you can understand the hand signals when they come over to the bench, and you can see who's in the box. And if you can, you know, figure out the time. It's easy to say, you know, Senators penalty to number 25, Chris Neal, 2 minutes of roughing at 11:52. In the preseason, we tried something that was a little different for me. I've been announcing upstairs in the press box for 7 years, and we tried during two of the games in the preseason against Montreal and against the Islanders, where I announced from the penalty box. And it was not only really cool to be that close to the action, but it was great to hear the penalties directly from the refs as opposed to having it relayed upstairs to me. So that was a neat experience, and I hope that that if there's room, that'll be my permanent home for the season.
Just make sure that box isn't over between the benches, especially if Patrick Waugh comes to town. But that's an aside.
That would be a dream come true. If he had an issue that run across the ice, I'd love to hear that. That's it's like welcome to the NHL this year. You had Torts doing it last night in Vancouver against Edmonton Oilers and Patrick Waugh. Like, I'm wondering now, everything happens in threes. Who's going to be the third? Is it going to be Paul McLean? Who's next?
Terrier.
Maybe.
Oh, that would be good. Well, he remembered when he did that years ago, when he made that I'm going to cut your throat gesture in Montreal years ago when he was a coach the first time around. Remember he did that? So if anybody's going to be yelling, no respect, maybe it's Terrier. Yeah, that'd be cool.
So with the new season coming up, we got the home opener coming a week from Thursday. Anything special you can share with us in terms of plans for the in-game experience? Have you made any requests already to Alex for Cotton Eye Joe, new goal song, anything like that, or anything you're able to share?
Everything is under wraps right now as we speak. Mostly, I mean, that makes me sound like I'm really important, but quite frankly, nobody's told me anything yet. I'm sure I usually find out a couple of days before, and they don't tell me on purpose because they know I have a big mouth. And they know I can't resist the urge to put it on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, or 17 other social media sites. So they're pretty tight-lipped right now. I mean, the theme this year is fearless. That's the hashtag. I mean, last year we had Pesky Sends, and this year fearless. So I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But I wish I had some great piece of, great scoop that I could get the Sens underground before anybody else. But I just don't know. I mean, did you guys see what Toronto did last night?
Yeah.
With the puck dropper?
Yeah. Well, they had Metallica's. They had Metallica's One, I think was the song. And I was a little surprised by Andy Frost, their PA announcer, because I watched the Montreal home opener last week and I thought they did a really good job. I mean, Montreal, they just, they've been around for 100 years. They know how to do, those types of events. And then when I watched the Toronto one last night, I thought their PA announcer, Andy Frost, was really low key. I mean, some people don't like the way I do hang time on Milan Mikolic or on, the way I announce Jason Spezza, whatever. But, I thought for a home opener, I thought he would just, go a little bit longer on the names. It was kind of like, "I'm your captain, number three, Dion Phaneuf." Like,
oh yeah, he just kind of rushed right through it.
Yeah, yeah. And then the PA, and then the guy who came out, I asked this question on my own Facebook page about, he had a chance of a lifetime to drop a puck, and should he have stayed classy? Instead, what he does is, he sticks his tongue out to the Senators team and, blocks his nose, and he's chanting, "Go Leafs, go," as he's going down. I didn't have a problem with the chanting of the "Go Leafs, go," but I thought what he did was kind of classless. And when I put it on my Facebook page today, every Leaf fan's coming after me for the comment, but what else is new? I thought, if you're going to be there at the home opener, do you do that? I wouldn't do it for the home opener. And I think what he did last night is potentially going to ruin it for any other team now that wants to do something like that. Because if you want to bring a fan on the ice, every team now is going to have to think twice, do we bring somebody on the ice? Are they going to do what the guy in Toronto did? Did he just ruin it for everybody else? And then the other thing I wondered about with that, that guy who came out was, I know he entered a contest, but I thought, why wouldn't you open that contest up to all ages? I think it would have been cooler to have a 10-year-old kid dropped the puck last night as opposed to this guy who acted like a 5-year-old.
Yeah, and they didn't really have a story as to why he won or anything else like that. And I think Boston does a good job with that, with especially in the playoffs last year. I don't know if you caught that, but the victim from the bomb, where he didn't have his, or he lost his legs in that, and then they brought him back for the last game too. So there, if you have a story against it, not just you want to draw.
Yeah, I watched his. I watched this guy, Brian Brett, I think is his name, the guy who dropped the puck in Toronto. And I watched before I was before I was shooting my mouth off on Facebook. I said, okay, what's the guy's story? And I went onto the Leafs website. I watched the story, and he's just a guy who entered a contest. He's been a fan since '93, and he's just a big fan. And I'm like, that's it? Like, what's going on? You know, did he? Is there a sad story here? Is there? There was nothing. So whatever. I mean, the Leaf fans that are coming after me today because I posted that story are saying, "Oh, it's just sour grapes. You guys lost. You guys always got to complain about something." It's like, no, he acted classless when he came out there, plain and simple. But that is, that's a classic battle of Ontario, right? There's always got to be a storyline.
Exactly. Let alone a shootout maneuver. But we're going to touch on that later. Now, and you kind of touched on this too, Stu, just in the name calls that you do, just with the Milan and all of that fun stuff. What's one name that you've really had difficulty in the past spitting out?
On Ottawa?
Or just anywhere in the league?
Occasionally you get... Here's where it gets tricky, because occasionally you'll get a name that'll show up on the visitor's roster. Not so much on the Ottawa side, because, you know, usually, you know, you... The Ottawa guys, you can get their names right away just because it's so much easier. But you'll get a guy that'll show up, and he'll, let's just say he'll have been in the league, you know, 7-8 years, and he's playing in a market where they're not as hockey crazy as we are. And I'll go up to Dean Brown and I'll say, "Dean, how do you, you know, just give me a refresher. How do I say this guy's name again?" And I always tell Dean, "I'd rather look like a moron in front of you than say the wrong thing in front of 18,500 fans. And then, you know, the Twitterverse will come after me." So Dean always says to me, "No, this is the way I announce it, and, you know, and double check with their guy, you know, the visiting radio or visiting TV guy, and double check with them." But there's times when the visiting team guys will say it differently than Dean. And I often defer to a guy like Dean Brown, because he's been around a long time. He knows his stuff. He checks the NHL guides. He goes up to the player himself and says, "How do you want your name announced?" And the player will say, "Oh, just announce it like this." Bob Cole, on the other hand, has a different way of doing it. Bob Cole and I have had numerous discussions in the press box, because he'll come up to me and say, "Stunt, how do you announce that name there, number 22? And I'll tell him. He says, "Well, I announce him differently." "Okay, Bob, you announce him your way, I'll announce him my way." And then Bob's answer to me is, "Well, you know, I go up to the player and say, how does your mother pronounce your name?" "Well, everybody, you know, my mother calls me Stuart. But I don't go by Stuart, I go by Stu." So you got to ask the player, how does he want to be called? And, you know, throughout the years, there was, I forget his name. I was a backup goaltender for the Islanders a couple of years ago. I remember he got called in, I think it was the second period, middle of the second period, he got put in the game. It was a game in Ottawa, and I didn't know how to announce his name, but I thankfully Dubowicz? Asked before the game. What's that?
Was it Wade Dubowicz? Or however you
No. Or it may have been him. I don't know. I can't remember what I did 10 minutes ago. It may have been him. but I remember asking before the game, because, you know, even if a guy, you doesn't matter if they're injured, whatever, you always want to ask the name just in case, especially for a backup goaltender. And, you know, it's a good thing I did, because as soon as that guy came in, I saw him leaving the bench. I'm like, "Oh my God, it's a good thing I asked," because, you know, a lot of times I can't, you know, run down the hallway and ask these guys. But, you know, as far as the NHL goes, there isn't really a name, you know, like here in Ottawa last year when we had Dzerzhinsky, I remember looking at that and I'm like, "Good God, are you kidding me?" So I went up to Gordy before the game, Gord Wilson. I said, "Goody, like, how do I pronounce his name?" He's like, "Stu, it's Dzerzhinsky." I'm like, "It doesn't spell like that." He goes, "No, trust me, it's Dzerzhinsky." Same thing with Borowiecki. I asked Borowiecki, you know, I mean, I remember when he got drafted, nobody could say his name. And I even asked him at the Sens golf tournament this year, just before training camp. I said, dude, just let me hear you say your name. He's like, Borvietsky. I'm like, Borvietsky. Yeah, perfect. So that's, you know, that's how you got to do it with these guys. You just got to ask them, you know, how do you want your name announced? Your name? How do you want it?
I'm kind of surprised that the league doesn't do something like phonetically, so it's standard, and that all you guys would have that. But.
They do. They actually, I just got the guide this week. But, you know, a lot of times you can look, I could pull up that up. But sometimes you can look at it, you know, as many times as you want. I'm trying to find the pronunciation guide right now. I've got it right here. And you can look at a name. It doesn't matter what name. And you look at the way it's spelled phonetically, and you're like, here's one here. Let's see. Terrence Amoroso, defenseman for Philadelphia. Amoroso. Terrence. Okay, that's a fairly easy one. Miro Altonen, who's a center from the Anaheim Ducks. And then they give you, here it is, 2013-2014 National Hockey League player pronunciations. The pronunciations are listed in United Press International phonetic style. Okay, good luck if you can figure that one out. At the end of the day, you just ask the guys who cover the team on a daily basis. And the other thing, too, is, you know, I love hockey, and probably out of all the sports, I watch that the most. So you hear the way announcers are saying their names. You know, I listen to the way Gord Miller, you know, pronounces names on TSN. I listen to the way, you know, Jim Houston does it on CBC. I listen to the way Dean Brown does it. I listen to the way Gordy Wilson does it. So, you know, you listen to enough games, you know, you hear the names. You don't always go just by what you're hearing on SportsCenter. You just have to listen to more than one place, because people get very protective of names. I mean, I've mispronounced names before. You get a French-Canadian player who's played in the NHL, you know, for 10 years, and he's had his name, you know, done with a U.S. tone for 10 years, and then he comes into a city like Montreal or Ottawa, and you now have to put the French twist to his name, even though the rest of the league has anglicized his name. So you always have to keep that in the back of your head, too. Because if I don't, I'll hear about it.
Of course you will.
I'll hear about it.
Absolutely. Stu, thank you for joining us. But before we leave, you've done work in the past with No More Bullies, which is a very, very good cause, and with DIFD, which the Senators have been involved in. Are there any particular causes you'd like to give a shout out to?
You know, No More Bullies is the one that I'm, you know, the biggest fan of. It's the one that we started. We're heading into our third season now of schools. On Tuesday is our first visit for our third season, which is pretty amazing for an idea that just started out as a tweet one day. So I'm a pretty big fan of that, because I see where the money goes. You know, it goes right to YouthNet at CHEO, which helps these kids one-on-one. And the other one that I'm a big fan of, you know, specifically this time of year, just because it's coming up, is anything, you know, autism related. You know, I know people who have kids who are, you know, dealing with it, parents and families who deal with it. And I, you know, I've seen firsthand just, you know, what they struggle with. So anytime I can, you know, try and help raise money for that, you know, I try and do whatever I can. So, you know, the anti-bullying thing for me is huge, and you know, kids should just be kids at the end of the day. Anything I can do to help them, I'm all for.
Excellent. Great cause too. Stu, again, thank you very much for joining us. This has been fantastic.
Thank you, Sens Underground.
And for our next interview, we have Ian Mendez, formerly from Sportsnet TV, now with TSN Radio in Ottawa.
On the line with us now, we're both honored and excited to have a familiar voice to Sens fans from TV broadcasts and now on local sports radio TSN 1200, Ian Mendez. Ian, thanks for coming on with us tonight.
Hey, guys. No problem at all. How are you doing?
Excellent. I think we're all doing great. We're all excited that hockey's back and the regular season started, and we're looking forward to everything.
Yeah, it's, you know what, guys? It's great to have hockey back in October, right? I mean, you go back to a year ago at this time, and, you know, it was so frustrating for those of us that were covering the lockout, and it just never it just never seemed like there was excitement around the game. And I remember thinking, part of me thought, well, even if they come back, maybe they've damaged this the product too much. So it's you know, it's fantastic that we're back here a year later, and people are genuinely excited, I think, in this city for another NHL season.
And you're probably glad you're not talking about big wigs going up and down escalators in New York City anymore. So
exactly.
Very good thing. So you've been through some big changes, you know, previously being on Sportsnet on TV, and now you're on radio with now the TSN 1200. Is, you know, anything you can tell us about what's new at the station, and tell us about your show?
Yeah, you know, for me, it was a situation where I was, you know, I wasn't really looking to leave Sportsnet per se. I wasn't like actively trying to get out, because I mean, I love my job, but at the same time, I think we were at a point, my wife and I have two pretty young kids, and you know, we were starting to think that the travel was getting to be too much of a grind. And for me, if the job was just doing the Senators broadcasts on Sportsnet, I wouldn't have left. Honestly, I wouldn't have left. But my issue was, it wasn't just that. I was covering baseball playoffs. I was covering the Blue Jays. I was covering, you know, 2-3 extra rounds of the playoffs, and you know, always sort of on call to travel and then go maybe do some anchoring work. And it just got to the point where I think we were ready for a lifestyle change. So for us, when the opportunity presented itself a couple of months ago, that maybe there was an opening at the station, I was certainly intrigued and was really excited that it all worked out. It's ironic that the day that I started at the radio station was the day that they launched as TSN 1200, because, you know, obviously to go from Sportsnet to TSN is a pretty big, you know, doing a pretty big 180 in the broadcasting world. But you know, it's been a week that I've been doing the radio. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm excited that there's some games to talk about here, because the first few days it was kind of still the end of training camp, and I felt like we were just kind of rehashing topics. So I'm excited to get in there tomorrow on Monday and start to digest and analyze kind of what took place in those first two road games for Ottawa.
Yep. And actually, with the season just underway, what are the, some things that we should look forward to? So some of the players and maybe having the biggest improvements this season over last year.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, when I look at this Ottawa team, I'm really intrigued on a couple of guys, and I think we saw a little bit of it on Saturday night. I'm excited about Kyle Turris. I think this guy has the potential to be a legitimate 55 to 60 point guy, which, as you guys know, if that's your number two center, can get you 55 points or 60 points, you're doing something right. And I think he's got that potential. I think he's got some chemistry going right now with Clark MacArthur and Corey Conacher. And, you know, that's a player that I think this is a big year for Kyle Turris. It's the first year of his new contract. But at the same time, I feel like he's sort of ready to take his game to the next level. And I thought the game he played Saturday night at the Air Canada Center might have been one of his four or five best games I think I've ever seen him play for the Senators. So, you know, that, if I'm looking at one guy that was here last year that I think didn't really take a significant step forward, it would be him. And then there's, you know, some other obvious ones like Patrick Wierkosz and Jared Cowan, who I think are going to get more ice time and more responsibility because they have new contracts, and they're sort of being slotted in as your second pairing. So, you know, if I had to pick a handful of guys to look at, those would be the ones.
Now, comparing that to the discussion that's been going on over the past couple of weeks with Mika Zibanejad, what were you thinking about the level, his effort level and compete level in camp, and how DaCosta and Pageau apparently outperformed him?
Yeah, you know what? I can't sit here and tell you that, yeah, I watched training camp and, boy, did I think Mika Zibanejad was dogging it. I don't think that at all. I think what happened was DaCosta and Pageau just simply raised their games. And I'm not saying that Mika wasn't trying. Maybe, you know, on some subconscious level, he thought he was coming into camp and had played, you know, down the stretch and into the playoffs last year and had been a regular, and maybe thought that his job was sewn up. And again, that's not to say that he didn't come in here and give it his all. But I think if there's some sense of comfort, maybe you don't feel like you need to go all out. Whereas the other two, DaCosta and Pageau, came into camp thinking, came into the camp thinking, I got to do everything to impress management. So I really liked DaCosta's game during training camp, but at no time, to be honest with you guys, at no time did I think he was going to move ahead of Mika Zibanejad on the depth chart. I just thought, I never foresaw a scenario 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago that saw Stefan DaCosta ahead of Mika Zibanejad. But obviously, management and Paul McLean saw things differently. And, DaCosta didn't play Saturday night at the Air Canada Centre. Does that mean that he's sort of on the bubble? I don't know. But I'm not sure that this is a permanent thing. I think if Mika goes down and has a terrific stretch of games, whether it's 5 games or 25 or 30 games, I don't see how he doesn't come back here and play. I still think the organization thinks highly of him. I still think he's got a very bright future in the National Hockey League, and it might start as early as this season. It's just, it's one of those things where obviously they didn't like what they saw out of him in the 2.5 weeks of camp.
All right. Now also with this, Bobby Ryan has taken some flack in regards to his fitness level and his speed. I think pretty much from one of your colleagues there. But anyway, considering his previous success, what do you think's missing from his games, or what are fans missing out, and maybe things that he's actually used to seeing, but we're just not seeing him do it yet?
Well, listen, yeah, and I know my partner in crime, Sean Simpson, has been, I call him the town crier because he's been, ringing the alarm bell on Bobby Ryan for a couple of weeks. And hey, listen, it's hard to defend the first two games that you saw out of Bobby Ryan. I'm having a hard time thinking of a grade A scoring chance that he had. I could be wrong, but I can't. I think he had what, 5 shots on goal in the Buffalo game, and then maybe a couple of shots on goal last night. But I can't think of a chance where you say, "Oh wow, this was an unbelievable grade A scoring opportunity created by Spezza and Ryan." So yeah, I think after two games, there's a reason to be a little bit wary, but I'm starting to try to put some pieces together I write a piece for the Ottawa Citizen every week. And I said to them, look, I'm going to look into the numbers here and look at Bobby Ryan's career numbers. And you look at Bobby Ryan's career numbers, he's a notoriously, notoriously slow starter, guys. Epically slow starter, 2 goals in his first 8 or 9 or 10 games type of guy. So if you use that as a barometer and realize that this guy is always a slow starter, if you can live with the fact that he should heat up a little bit later on, I think most fans will be okay with that. But obviously, when you come into this market and you are essentially seen as the replacement for Daniel Alfredsson, or at the very least, the guy that mitigated Alfie's departure, because remember, you guys know how you felt that day when Daniel left. You were probably crushed, and then you heard a couple hours later that Bobby Ryan was coming, and maybe you weren't as crushed. I'm not saying you weren't crushed, but you weren't as crushed. So there's a lot of pressure on him. I don't think he can go 7 or 8 games to start the season without scoring, but I do think that most players in the National Hockey League deserve at least 3 or 4 or 5 games to at least get acclimated with new line mates and new systems. And, this guy was a slow starter in a system that he knew in Anaheim. So you can imagine he'd probably come in here and be off to a fairly slow start.
So any thoughts on the first few games? Anderson was pretty stellar in Buffalo, but had a couple bad goals in the shootout last night versus the Leafs. Do you notice any flaws in his game, or do you think it's just a bad game for him?
I don't have a problem with him in the shootout last night. Honestly, guys, the shootout is such a crapshoot that you don't know what's going to happen. And listen, I see his point and Paul McLean's point on the Mason Raymond goal that, a lot of people thought that was the goal, the type of play that they were trying to eliminate from the shootout. So I don't really have a problem with him in the shootout. The only goal that I may have said, okay, this is one that maybe shouldn't give up, was they're up 4-2. with 15 seconds left in the second period. And I know it's a power play goal, but, you know, Joffrey Lupo from the slot, it's probably one that Craig would like to have back. And I know it kind of came in funny, but, you know, if he doesn't let that goal in, I don't think that they blow a two-goal lead in the third period. I really don't. But you got the sense when you watch that game and Lupo scores to make it 4-3, I could have told you right there that game's going to be tied. Like, without a doubt in my mind, that game was going to be tied. So, listen, Craig stole one for them in Buffalo on Friday. Absolutely, hands down, stole one for them. And he didn't steal one for them on Saturday. But he certainly wasn't the reason why he lost. And that's the one thing that I'll always say about Craig Anderson. And you guys probably agree with me. He is very rarely the reason why they lose a hockey game. And that's, you know what? That's all you really want out of your number one goalie is, don't be the reason why. Don't always give up a soft goal. Don't always, get the team playing on its heels. Craig very rarely does that. And I would not at all lay the blame at his feet for what happened at the Air Canada Centre last night.
Now, also with this, and you talked about Turris a little bit too. That second line really seems to be clicking, and with MacArthur being a new guy into the team and Corey Conacher just being in his second professional or NHL year at least, how do you see them working out long term?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure that Corey Conacher's spot on that line is entrenched in stone, and I don't mean that in any disrespect to Corey Conacher, but remember, as of, you know, 8 days ago, that job was right up for grabs. And they were looking at all their options of what was best to do it. So right now, and I've always been a believer that they are more likely to stick with duos that they're comfortable with. You know, Zach Smith and Chris Neal seem to be a duo that they're comfortable with. Jean-Gabriel Pageau and Eric Condra seem to be a duo that they're happy with. And I think that Clark MacArthur and Kyle Turris is a duo that they're going to stick with. And then do they alternate the right winger on there? Yeah, probably a little bit. But Corey gets the first crack at it. And, I've liked their game. I obviously, MacArthur sets up the Carlson goal on Friday night with a nice play. And he had a handful of chances. And, you know, if he had a little bit of puck luck, he probably gets one, if not two or three, last night in Toronto. So the one thing that you want is you're very rarely going to get a night where all four of your lines are clicking, right? You guys have watched as much hockey as I have or anyone else has. You're never going to get a night where, boy, the Spezza line is going and the Tourist line is going and the Patro line. Like, it doesn't work that way. You don't usually only get one, and if you're lucky, you'll get two lines that are really clicking. And last night, the Tourist line was the line that was clicking. But, and as a result of that, there's no way in the world Paul McLean makes any changes for that game Wednesday at LA, because that line was their best line. And they might start to eat a little bit more of the minutes if they continue to play that way. And I've always, I talked to a lot of guys in the summertime when they were skating with Clark MacArthur for the first time. I remember Mark Bifot coming off the ice and telling me in August, he said, you're not going to believe that Clark MacArthur's skill level is, he said, is off the charts. And you talk to people, they'll rave about Clark's ability to skate. But his hands, you talk to teammates, they're like, this guy's got really good hands. So I think there's a potential there, like I said, for Kyle to come in and maybe have 55 or 60 points and Clark to get back to the 20-goal plateau and sort of be what he was 2-3 years ago.
Well, we'd all certainly enjoy that. Just to step back from the Senators with one last question. You've been traveling with the team for years. What was your favorite arena to travel to, and what was the worst?
By far, my favorite was Madison Square Garden. Always loved it. There's nothing like going to a game in Midtown Manhattan, and you almost feel like you're part of something bigger. And that's one rink I'll definitely miss visiting. So when you do a broadcast from New York, you just feel like you're important. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it just feels like it's big time. So that's the one that I would say, without a doubt, I'll miss the most. And in terms of the ones that That's the worst. I probably got out at a good time with Detroit moving into the division because, quite frankly, Detroit after 6 p.m. is a dicey place, and Joe Louis Arena is a is basically a rat's nest, guys, to work out of. It's terrible. So I won't miss working out of the JLA there, that's for sure.
Wow. Well, thanks again for joining us, Ian. Can you tell our listeners how they can follow you or where they can read your articles?
Yeah, no, I mean, I got the weekly piece in the Citizen every Tuesday that comes out, and I'm going to start writing for the TSN radio site. It's just a question of when we can get my old blog that I used to do at Sportsnet over onto the news site. So it's just taking some time with the technical stuff, and then obviously I do all the Twitter stuff too, which is I find it kind of fun to do the Twitter stuff.
Great. Well, thanks again, Ian. You have a good night.
Yep, guys, anytime. You too.
Thank you again to both Stu and Ian for being generous with their time. Those were excellent interviews and some very good insight from two very different perspectives of being around the Ottawa Senators. Now, most importantly to start off with, Pan, I've been keeping track of your boy for you. I don't know if you heard about it, but Guillaume Latendresse has signed in the Swiss League. So he does have a contract now. He's no longer unemployed.
Good for him.
There you go. I know it was important to you, so I wanted to make sure you knew.
Well, better than DeCoster.
There, I've been watching. We were having a conversation last week and noticing some very, very odd things on CapGeek, which, I mean, I presume that they're correct. They may not be 100% correct or 100% accurate all the time, but there's some very strange things going on certain team rosters that just don't seem to make a whole lot of sense. And Pan, you and I were texting back and forth about Tampa Bay and how could they possibly be a cap team? They already bought out LeCavalier. It's not counting against the cap. How can they still be up there? And it seems that for some peculiar reason, they have an awful lot of defensemen on their roster at the moment that haven't been
set
down.
As many as they need.
Yeah. And I don't know why they're not sending them down. I'll be honest, I haven't done a whole lot of research on it to find out why they're all there. Maybe they're all one-way contracts. I don't know. But why do they have, was it 11 or 12, something like that?
It's 11, yeah.
Yeah. They're just sitting there. It makes no sense.
When did they sign Hal Gill?
Just at the end of the preseason. I think it was about a week ago. Before opening night. Yeah.
You've got 10 other guys, and you can't carry that many.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I just thought it was one of those strange things. But once I was looking at that, I looked around and was trying to see what other weird things might be going on. And of course, nowhere is quite as good for drama as the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have $5.5 million in cap space and just under $10 million in spending, tied up in players that aren't on the roster.
Darcy Tucker
and Colby Armstrong are both still getting $1 million each. And that counts against the cap. They have buyouts for Komisarek and Grabowski, which aren't counting against the cap, but those come up to almost $3 million between the two of them. They have retained salary for Scrivens and Fratton, which counts against the cap. And they have John Michael Lyles buried in the AHL, which is still $3 million against the cap.
And we're over budget.
Well, it's the $200,000 that we're paying as a buyout to Bobby Butler that's causing all the problems.
Oh yeah,
that's why.
That's it.
You know what? Okay, you just lay aside what you think's the better team, Toronto or Ottawa. If you're going to ask this podcast, you know what our answer is, right? But just you get all the fans razzing you in social media and people like on Saturday night. It's a battle of Ontario. Get out your tissues. You know what? Toronto is a team with lots of money, apparently the better record. Take a look at last year. Take a look right now. And you got Ottawa. Hello, we're the underdogs. We are the underdogs. So, absolutely. I mean, get over yourselves.
True enough.
If anything, you should be winning. You should be freaking upset if you don't win.
They've run to the show once in the last 8 years, right?
Oh, I know. They're a joke.
We all know how that ended.
They're a joke. But
May 13th.
The point is that we are the underdogs every time we play the Maple Leafs. And they need to remember that, too, before they get too high on their horses.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Because we took them to the shootout.
Yeah.
Well, you're thinking that, you know, there's actually cognizant thought processes going on behind all this razzing and send suck and everything else. That these are the, this is the same fan base that thought parosing was funny.
Oh, actually, didn't the printed media today have some takes on why Toronto fans should be upset at Ottawa? And
yeah, that
better have been an editorial. Because if that was a staff writer writing that, that was a Toronto Star or Sun?
Toronto Sun. It was a staff writer.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I thought it was a blog post that they had decided to post.
Well, now, us who, once again, we do this as a hobby, not as a career, have more followers than this guy does.
I just came across as being a mouth-breathing Neanderthal.
Well, he's just saying ridiculous. Reasons why. It's hard to hate Ottawa. They're so boring and their fans are so boring. But they earn way much more money than we do here in Toronto. And they're taking all our tax dollars. So no wonder they're so quiet.
The way that he put it too is, I think it was a median income is higher in Ottawa versus Toronto.
Possibly.
The median isn't the average.
No, just the middle, whatever.
Right. You want to look at the average or the mean salary?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Toronto's way up there with all the CEOs and everybody else that they've got and the executives there.
But consider the source. Number one, it's the Sun. And number two, it's the Toronto Sun.
But how are they able to do this?
No other content?
I guess. No other print media's going out.
Yeah. Hey, the Ottawa if that's Sun, what they're paying for. That's
Ottawa
what they get.
Sun retorted, by the way. Just
it was retorted?
The Ottawa Sun had a retort article on why you should hate the Leafs fans, and it's just stupid. Like,
that's descending down to their level, and they're more experienced at being there, so they're better at it.
Again, it's Sun Media.
Yeah, exactly right. It's Sun
it's
Media.
It's like that Berkshire article from after the playoffs there, Cardinal.
Oh, yeah. That was well written one on that. Yeah. That's just a bitter Habs fan. That's what that was.
Even Don Cherry gave his recap of the Daniel Alfredson situation. I don't know if you caught that.
No, I think it was bang on, though.
Well, it's just like the Toronto Coles Notes version. It probably is as bang on as anything because he didn't say much. But, you know, it's like, yeah, here's your Coles Notes version.
Yeah. Spout on it for 20 seconds, move on. Whatever. Couple of quick things from around the league to talk about. The Paros versus Orr fight in the opening game of the season. It's reignited all the talk about fighting in the NHL and how things are bad and it should be taken out. And I mean, there's always the people who are talking about that.
Toronto's a goon squad. Let me just get that out of the way. First two games of the season, they goon it up.
Yeah. Well, it's look at their coach. What do you expect? That's Carlisle. That's the way Carlisle likes the game to be played.
I'm shocked that there was none against Ottawa, to be honest with you. Because last year, Toronto would always fight in the first 5 minutes.
I think that was all McLean saying, nope. I think that's why probably Cassian didn't play very much. Because, nope, don't do it. Don't go. And I agree with that, by the way. I don't want to play Toronto and try to goon it up with them. I want to see them try to goon it up and we just finesse them out of the game.
You play your game, we'll play ours, and we'll see who wins. But we're not playing your game.
Yeah.
Not interested.
Sorry, that was a tangent.
The whole thing about this fight was, I mean, Paro still had his helmet on, and he threw a punch as Orr was tripping. Orr was holding on to him, basically pulled him down, and his chin smashed into the ice. It's a freak occurrence that, you know, the same thing could happen from a bad hit that goes wrong, and somebody crashes their head into the ice, and now, a concussion happens. It has nothing to do with fighting, per se. And I mean, I'm not an advocate for sense. I am the first person to say, I hate the goon against goon staged fight. I'm trying to change the momentum of the game. That's not what I think fighting should be. It should be two guys who are getting really, really annoyed with each other because something just happened. And it's not just, you just delivered a clean check.
Yeah.
So I have to fight you now. No. It has to be something, you know, real, not I'm just trying to get you back for something you did that was okay. Now, there's been talk about helmet rules. And I think it was, I can't remember the name of the two guys who did it, who had several fights in the same game, but they decided to pull each other's helmet off to get around that rule.
Yeah.
I laughed. I laughed and I laughed because, okay, well, You want to put in a rule like that just seems a bit stupid? Well, I mean, I understand the reasoning behind it, but I mean, if you're going to put in a rule like that, maybe you should do it like the OHL, which is as soon as the helmets come off, the fights end. And in the OHL, it's 10 fights. And after 10, you start getting suspended. Unless you've been instigated against.
Like
so you
that.
Can't instigate into somebody into their 11th fight to get them suspended.
Oh, here's an idea. When two guys want to have a stage fight, why don't they just like, you know, ding, ding, walk over to the side, pull out these two, you know, big, I don't even know how to explain these things. They're kind of like poles and they have a foam pad on each side, like the gladiators would use, and just kind of bat each other like that and just turn into a whole sideshow.
It'll be entertaining or something. Yeah. Anyway, Pam, what do you...
I don't know. I don't like the stage fights where it's just... Because if it's Orr versus Kasyanov and face-off, it doesn't mean anything.
Nope.
This fight, I think it was the right time to do it. Because it was a scrum in front of the net, and there was pushing people around. Most of it was on PK, in my opinion. But
well, Subban had Orr in a headlock, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that's where it all started.
Yeah. And so Peros just jumped in and said, I'll take care of this. And it was absolutely just a freak accident. But then when you've got the guys dropping their helmets or taking off each other's helmets for whatever reason.
It hurts
my
hand.
That's the rule that you need to get rid of. Sorry?
It hurts my hand when I punch you. Stop punching. Sorry.
I don't know what to say, but it's just, to me, it's ridiculous because if you want to fight, you fight, but you don't want the guy to take his helmet off. And I think they threw that rule. I don't even know what the rule is. So is it if you fight with the visor on or if you instigate with the visor?
With the visor.
I thought that rule had been taken out.
Because
you're not allowed to take your helmet off, so they had to take away that one. I'm not sure. I can't even keep it straight anymore.
But you're allowed to take a few swings with your stick if it's self-defense. So why don't we just have like a big fencing match or something?
I don't know. I don't get it. Because even if you would think like football players, right? When they get into scrims, you want them to drop their helmets for that? No.
No.
It's ridiculous.
But there is no fighting in the NFL. You get
very
severely fined. That's just the way that league works.
No. It's a different game and I totally get that, but
yeah,
whatever. It's just really, really weird to me. Just get rid of all those rules and don't let them drop their helmets because that's when people get hurt.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about in the past few days, especially in the mainstream media, about you know, we get rid of fighting and the rats will take over the game, which is the thing you've been hearing about for ages. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. In fact, I don't disagree with it at all. But there's still an awful lot of rat-like behavior going on right now. And if you want to clean that up and modify the rules to fighting so that it becomes less staged and more realistic, like if you've done something really stupid, then you're going to pay for it. Take away the instigator rule. Because that's what that's what a lot of the weasels hide behind.
Yep.
I didn't start this. I'm not starting this. Okay, well, you're going to get pummeled then. It's up to you. But okay, your choice. But I don't think that can happen because they only put that in place. That's since two lockouts ago, isn't it? Or was it around two lockouts ago that it was put in place, the instigator rule? I can't remember exactly. But they can't turn around and take away a rule that's less than 10 years old because that would be admitting that it was the wrong thing to do. Even if it would be the right thing to do.
Hey, what do we know? We're just fishermen from Nova Scotia.
That was a great... I laughed when I saw that. I'm like, that's almost as good as Player 61. I don't know what the Player 61 on my own team.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's because you caught him.
I thought that was brilliant. Speaking of fighting, a little segue over to Patrick Waugh, back in the league as a coach, and opening game against the Ducks, got a little fiery, got a little ornery, a little lippy apparently.
Surprise.
Oh, I'm not surprised. It happened a little faster than I thought, and perhaps a little more extreme overall than what I was expecting, but I'm not particularly surprised that he went a little bat crazy over something near the end of the game. And I mean, it kind of did look like somebody was trying to do a knee on knee with Nate McKinnon, but I think he took it a little far, especially trying to push the glass over and, you know, yelling at other players on the ice and so on.
And who knew that the glass on the between the benches was actually on hinges?
Yeah, I'm surprised that it moved that easily. I guess they'll be reinforcing that when Colorado's coming to town. Every arena in the league will be reinforcing that. But
I just found it ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's your first day on the job, really, and you're going to have that big of a fit.
Yeah, you're having a meltdown, right, you know, in front of everybody that soon. Good precedent to set. Yeah. Not really.
And we all know about his temper, right?
Exactly. Is this a sign of things to come? Is this going to be regular? I can see Joe Sakic just standing there shaking his head going, oh, no, no, this isn't going to happen.
Sakic knows what he got himself into with him.
Well, Sakic still technically his boss, so
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
I'm sorry, Boudreaux, I couldn't hear what you're saying. This two Stanley Cup rings in my ears. Just waiting for that to come out. But
well, I think it'll be really interesting to see where this goes from here, especially if he encounters another coach that's a bit more fiery.
Well, like you mentioned, we were guests on the NHL on the Ice podcast earlier. Can't wait for a game against Vancouver in Colorado.
Oh yeah, Torts versus Patrick Waugh. They'll take that one out to center ice. That could be entertaining.
Did you hear Torts' comment about Glenn Healy?
No.
Oh, I wish I had the clip for it. Sorry. You can find this on YouTube. You can find this on Twitter. People referencing it too. But Glenn Healy made some comments about Vancouver and the press conference. John Tortorella basically said, I don't care what Glenn Healy says. And
that was great.
He said something stronger than that. Do you remember the exact words there, Pat?
They're telling, I don't care what CBC says. It's like, I just care about myself and the team.
Well, they don't know something what they're like talking that. About. Or
yeah.
And Elliot Freeman even tried to tell Healy to shut up.
That was awesome. That was great.
Oh, we need more of that in this world. Not less. More. More people telling Glenn Healy to be quiet. You're not relevant. We have but one email to read this week. Canuck, you're up for this one.
Yes, got an email from LM. Subject, you're wrong. Though I don't know why he said that for the subject. But anyway, what's going on, boys? I've saved the podcast till my commute home to work because I wanted to ramp up for the start of the season tonight. Just wanted to leave a quick note to say thanks for your podcast, and I always look forward to them. I've got nothing to argue about. Enjoy your show. Well, thanks for writing in, Alan. We do appreciate hearing that people are listening to us, and even if it's just a little quick note to say hello, hello back, and I'm glad you're listening.
Yeah, excellent. During the last episode, I apologized for not tweeting out a question I had asked two episodes ago about if people had bought a new sweater for this season. What had they bought? What was it customized at? Basically the overall response I got on the question was a lot of people seem to be buying blank ones. They're not getting them customized with a name and number. I get that. My first few were blank. I recently started getting customized ones, and I'm starting to think that paying extra is just paying more for potential of early obsolescence. So, and I might start rethinking that in the future. But I thought it was interesting that a lot of people are buying them without having a name and number put on the back. Because it seems to be the majority of the responses that we got. So thanks for that, folks. Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I picked up a Ryan jersey, which I look forward to wearing when we're in Anaheim. But, you know, I'm starting to think, especially that Alferson one that's up in the closet. I don't know if I want to continue buying name jerseys, but we'll see.
Well, you just like wearing the Anderson one because then you get free stuff, right?
Yeah. Or autograph requests.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, he's a little better shape than I am, that's for sure. But yeah.
Just sits down at the other EA or what was it? The other electronic boutique.
Yeah.
Just goes down and starts sunning off on video games.
That'd be hilarious. Should have done that. Should have done that. Or either that or go down and get an autograph from him.
Wait a minute. You know what? You get the two of us side by side and it's not that close, but.
Oh, yeah. It'd be close enough. It'd be close enough. I'm about done for tonight, guys. We've got an awful lot. There weren't too many games to talk about. There's lots to come in the weeks to come. You guys are going away. I'm not sure when our next episode is going to come out. So there could be quite a number of games.
Something from the road.
I hope to.
Yeah, I hope to.
So we'll get it done. We'll have,
maybe I'll have a better internet connection than today.
Technical difficulties, please stand by. Nah, it's been all right. It's been all right. So game three is coming up on Wednesday. You guys will be at that game. That's the Sands at the Kings.
Yeah.
And then next Saturday, game four on Saturday, October 12th, Sands at Sharks. Game five, Sunday, October 13th, Sands at the Ducks. Oh, you guys will have lots to tell about what's been going on at the other end of the continent from us, I'm sure. And then the Sens play Tuesday after that in Phoenix, and then they're finally home for the home opener a week and a half from now. Guys, you got anything else?
No.
I think we've covered pretty much everything.
You got to go pack.
Yeah. I got to go rent a car. I got to go find out what to do in L.A., We haven't planned any of this yet. We've been nuts.
See if I can find you a good restaurant to go or something.
That's good.
All right. Thank you again to Stu and Ian Mendez for being guests on our show tonight. It was very much appreciated. You guys were very gracious with your time, and we do appreciate it. Folks, you can email us at podcast@sendscallups.com. Be sure to visit the forums. Follow us on Twitter. And until next week, where we'll be probably all over the place on this continent, but we'll still be doing what we love to do the most, which is talk about the Ottawa Senators.
And fishing.
I got fishing stories, but I'll tell those another time. Good night, everybody.
Go, Sens, go.
Hi there, I'm Eugene from the new Canadian Tire Centre in Kanata, Ontario. I'd like to tell you about the new specials we have coming in for the new season. You'll be happy to know that we have the usual Phillips screwdrivers on sale, as well as the new Mastercraft Kevlar socks that everyone should wear, especially on the mean streets of Pittsburgh. Wait, what? Not Pittsburgh anymore. Well, what? Minnesota? Minnesota. Wild. We also have special pricing on yard cleanup tools for the fall, giving you everything you're going to need to keep those awful, filthy, and annoying leaves out of your yard. Also, check out the new array of PK pylons and slug salt, all available at the center. Come on in and have a look around. We have ample parking and are located a mere 87 kilometers from downtown Ottawa. Come on in to the Canadian Tire Center, where you can give like tourists, save like Andy.
SendsCallups.com.